other people can see and solve our problems faster than we can, and more efficiently too, because we're caught up and entrenched in the emotion, we're too close to it, we have cognitive bias, and bringing an external perspective to say, hey, like, what am I not seeing here? Which is why consultants or mentors or advisors exist, because they can see it more clearly than you can.
This is Digital Marketer.
Hey everyone, this is Mark DeGrasse, the president of Digital Marketer, and this is the podcast that keeps you up to date on everything you need to know when it comes to digital marketing, from the platforms you should be focused on to the kind of tactics and tools that are working today. Today our guest is Jordan Ross, the founder and CEO of 8-Figure Agency, and we're talking culture for scaling and exiting, as well as just keeping your sanity as a agency owner in the first place. So welcome, Jordan.
Yeah, Mark, thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, well, I think it's, right now, I think a lot of companies are really reassessing things. We've seen some big shakeups with really big businesses, but what's not talked about is that small businesses are having just as much trouble with keeping people, keeping the team motivated and growing, and really keeping that element of, success for everybody in the organization rather than just a company tapping into the, energy of the employees in order to grow the business and make profits. So if you have some tips on that, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's a great place. Within the last 30 minutes, I dropped a masterclass thread on Twitter. So by the time this is live, I'm sure it'll be well posted. But the theme of that thread was business is a game, really, it truly is a game. And if you understand what you're optimizing the game for, you're just going from strategy to improve your efficiency, right? Just like I'm a huge basketball fan. So like every game you have a strategy, every game you have opportunities and challenges. But in business, there's four constraints. That is literally it. There are only four constraints that will prevent your business from growing. How many leads do you get a month? What percentage of those leads do you close, and at what price? What's your operational capacity? So how many clients can you onboard, and how many clients can you maintain at one time? And what's your lifetime value? How long does the client stay, and how much they pay you over the lifetime of them working with you? That is literally it. So, we were talking beforehand and we were saying, how'd your year go? And, I was just like, real talk, like every year there's fucking challenges. And actually, I don't know if I'm allowed to drop F-bombs on this
spot. I
hope so. There's challenges every single year. And a lot of times I write content, right, to myself, where I wrote content to remind me, the more you embrace the challenge, the faster you get to where you want to go, right? So no matter at what size, no matter how big, when I was at Amazon, there's always things breaking and things they need to fix. As long as you identify, this is the current constraint that's preventing my company from growing to its next level, here's the list of ideas or processes or systems that we believe will get us from point A to point B, alleviating this constraint. So this is what we think will get us more leads. This is what we think will close us more deals. This is what we think will increase our capacity. This is what we think will increase the client's lifetime value. And then you truly implement it, and then you reassess and remeasure, and you say, hey, it worked, or hey, it didn't. And then why didn't it? And if you keep doing that last part, why didn't it work? Just go hire a consultant that's an expert on the topic. And that's the game, right? So we just get emotional about it. We get frustrated. Woe is me. This shit's hard. Heck, I've been doing this forever. The market's going down. All my clients in the SaaS industry left. Well, hey, maybe we shouldn't have targeted SaaS companies in the first place. For me, that's how I look at it. And it's really, as a human, just figuring out how do we deal with the emotion of being an entrepreneur to make it as logical as possible.
Yeah, man, it makes so much sense, because it's very systematic and it seems obvious. Like, set a plan, like identify the problem, set the plan, execute the plan, and then see how it goes. But I think a lot of people, like you said, like, well, you start with like, there's always challenges and you address the challenges. But what a lot of companies do, or individuals or entrepreneurs especially, is you look at the challenge and then you just avoid it. You're like, well, I know I should be setting up processes. I know I should have that team meeting. I know I should do these things, but I'm just so busy. I don't have time for this. So what do you say to business owners that say that? Like, I just don't have time to make a process or train my people.
Look, like, things won't change until you change them, right? So I was texting a buddy yesterday. This guy, within his first year going on YouTube, got up to 7,000 followers, which, if you don't know YouTube, that's like solid in your first 12 months. His videos are, even from 2 years ago, they're getting tens of thousands of views, and he's still generating so much business and demand from his YouTube channel, which now it's just like archived videos. And he stopped YouTube because he didn't like YouTube. And there's an amazing quote from Gary Keller. So Keller Williams, I think, is headquartered in Austin, if I'm correct, which I know you're at. And the quote is, business is the game for those that are willing to endure the monotony of success. There's a lot of shit that I don't want to do that I do because I'm just willing to endure the suck. And if you're not willing to endure it, who can you bring in to endure that for you and build it for you? And it's just a game of opportunity cost. Or if you don't have the time, can you make the time and truly like set aside? And if you truly can't make the time, are you willing to pay financially for someone to do it for you because you don't have the time? So it's just, what's the path you want to take? And there's always a consequence or an opportunity cost, but yeah, like things won't change until you change them.
Oh, that's huge. But you know, I will say that it sounds obvious. It's like, you know, there's a problem, again, you go to fix it. But the argument that you usually get from business owners or managers or whatever is they'll convince themselves that that's not the solution. So they'll say like, okay, well, here's the problem and here's probably the solution, but that solution is inconvenient or expensive or tedious. And so I'm going to convince myself that that isn't the solution. The solution is pizza on Friday. You know, that's the solution. So is there a way to break through the kind of like, I don't know, psychological tricks that we do to ourselves to convince us that the thing that has to be done isn't the thing that has to be done?
That's actually where I was going to go. So you have to be a really conscious individual, right? So I would say the average person is not. And what do I mean by a conscious individual, right? We have conscious thoughts, which I see what's happening in my brain or emotionally, and then we have unconscious thoughts. I just have a programming, which is a filter in which I view the world, but I don't actually know that filter exists. If you don't have the awareness, which a lot of people, you have to go through some sort of journaling process or self-coaching process or meditative process or reflection, intentionally reflective process, which most people don't. A lot of entrepreneurs, more entrepreneurs do than the average human. But the reason business is so tough, it's actually, that's one of the hardest things in business. It's, we are usually the bottleneck. So there's a principle in psychology, it's called Solomon's paradox. Solomon's paradox states that other people can see and solve our problems faster than we can and more efficiently too, because we're caught up and entrenched in the emotion, we're too close to it, we have cognitive bias, so, and a slew of other reasons. And bringing an external perspective to say, hey, like, what am I not seeing here? Which is why consultants or mentors or advisors exist, because they can see it more clearly than you can. So if you're stuck and you're like at a place where if you're not doing a conscious, meditative, reflective, holistic process, just bring someone else in. Even if it's 30 minutes, I bring a guy who runs I pay them for 30 minutes semi-annually. And I just, hey, can I sync with you every 6 months, whether for 30 minutes or an hour, and whatever your rate is, I'll pay it. And just those people that are so much for, like, they're crushing it and they're willing to give me their 2 cents, a lot of times that alleviates whatever the constraint is that I'm not seeing, because a lot of times I just don't see it.
Yeah. I mean, you've made so many huge points there. And, you know, I think it's tough for business owners and people who, you know, consider themselves super logical to take a step back and be, you know, like, your actual barrier is that logic. Like, you need to step back, you need to get into the, you know, kind of mental development, spiritual development, you know, the meditation, everything, and self-reflection. Because really the barrier is just ego, where it's just like, okay, I'm not going to do that because I don't think that's right. And I know what's up. And usually if you find a business owner where they do more lecturing than they do listening to problems and solutions, then you know that that person probably is not going to succeed in the long run, or even possibly the short run, because they can't see the problem, or they won't accept the problem, that there is a problem and that they're not the solution. And the fact of the matter, like you said, is it's like, no, there's way better people than you. And that's a good thing. It's not a threat. It's a good thing. So I don't know if the unawakened could get past that barrier, because it's a huge barrier. And then the other part is saying, okay, I accept that solution and I'm willing to, you know, be patient enough to endure the, you know, amount of work that it's going to take to make that work, instead of jumping in with another solution that doesn't work immediately.
I think there's a reason why whenever I meet guys who are running 10, 20, 50, $100 million your companies, they hold themselves in a different way than the seven-figure entrepreneur. Like truly, like when you are standing in front of them, they hold space and they view things totally differently. And that's just their mental, emotional, and like spiritual process. And that's not a coincidence. Like that is not a coincidence at all. And it's why so many entrepreneurs go to Tony Robbins events. Like I have a client, he's running a $3 million a year agency. He's like, hey, I'm going to a Tony Robbins event. This guy's an eight-figure entrepreneur. He just hasn't gotten there yet, right? And it's all mental. The whole game is mental. It's all what your strategy is. It's what are we aspiring to accomplish and how quickly do we get there? How quickly we get there is the strategy we put forth that we actually execute. So it's all mental, to your point.
I love that. Well, and there is some you have to disconnect yourself from the emotional side of running the business to be, okay, I'm doing this to make money or accomplish something. And I think case in point is Mark Cuban, right? Just sold and made $3 billion on the sale. And even though he always has loved that team and built it from essentially nothing, I think he bought the company for $85 million or something crazy and just sold it. And
I had no clue this happened, by the way.
Oh, no, this is pretty recent. I just saw it last night. I was like, oh, you're a basketball fan. Like you must have heard about he sold and it, or he's selling, he's in the process. Yeah.
Holy
and
so, macaroni. I didn't know that. That's wild.
Well, and it's like, I think he's the epitome of like the deal maker. A lot of people think that he's running for president, which is why he sold. But, you know, we'll see if that happens. I'm like, you know what? Might as well. We've had much worse people running for president. So go for it. You at least make money.
Yeah, 100%.
But in that sense, I think he really demonstrates like, hey, he's a businessman. It's a deal. It's a product. It's a, you know, a stepping stone to whatever he's trying to achieve long term. And even though it's $3 billion, I think at that level, it's a game, right? Because nobody needs $3 billion. It's not about the money. It's about the game.
Yeah, it's all a game, right?
Hey, everyone. I wanted to quickly interrupt the podcast for a special announcement. If you're listening to this podcast because you want to become a better marketer, then I want to share with you what I believe to be the most comprehensive digital marketing program on the market today. It's called the Digital Marketing Mastery Certification. You'll learn to leverage the tools and channels to predictably and profitably drive awareness, leads, sales, and referrals. Everything you need to know to become a true master of digital marketing. We'll take an in-depth look at the core digital marketing competencies, including content, email, social media, community, digital advertising, data and optimization, and more. After earning your digital marketing strategist certificate, you'll have the tools to effectively reach your target audience through a full scope marketing strategy. Get started today at digitalmarketer.com/strategycert.
And I went through a training institution. It was a coaching training back in 2018, right? This is when I thought I wanted to be Tony Robbins. And the final exercise, and this is a 12-month program, costs like $15,000. The final exercise that life is a game, truly. If you can see it from that vantage point, it's just like a video game. Like, all right, what's the next thing I got to implement or what do I got to overcome? That's all it is. But yeah, emotions are freaking hard. Being a human is a tough thing. It's not an easy thing.
No, and that requires a lot of discipline too. I mean, just self-reflection, like you said. And I've kind of gone through this process myself over the last couple of years. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I used to not view things like this. And, you know, because... You know, if you're like the serious business person, you're like, well, people are just tools, essentially, right? Like I tell them what to do, I set up the systems, and then I say go, and they're here to make money, and I'm here to make money, and that's all there is. And I think especially with the latest generation of kind of workers coming up, like that is not all there is. And maybe money's a necessity, of course, but their feeling of purpose and their, you know, progress towards their goals, like that will supersede any amount of money most of the time. So do you have for the culture side of it, of taking maybe the older business owner, say 40, 50, 60, and they're having to deal with this new expectation of the workplace. Do you have suggestions for how to kind of cultivate both the productivity you need while also, you know, delivering all the other crap? Yes.
Yeah. For those of you that don't know, TLC, it stands for tender loving care. Yeah. So I think you actually bucket into two things, which is what I was going to do. There's culture, and then there's like the human, like how do I take care of this person, which is a subset of culture. So my definition of culture is what your people say and do when you are not around. Like that is literally it. How do they perform? How do they act? What do they talk about? How do they feel when they go home? What are they talking about to their family about their job? Like That is culture. It's what your people are doing and saying and feeling and acting. That is it. So if you're a high performance business where people are having a very high level of output and they feel good about it, you got a good culture. If you have a high performance business, but people are stressed out, like I was at Amazon, you might have a culture of high output, but you have a culture of resentment too, right? So it's the collective. So for that business, at Amazon, we call it the old Amazon versus the new Amazon, because Amazon went through growing pains too. Like there used to be the just get shit done. We're going to treat you like we're working in a warehouse. We're not going to treat you like a true human. And when I came in, I was started at Amazon 2016. It was the new guard. Like we need to treat people like people and really go deeper. So on the people side, what we talk about 8F, there are really four variables that you got to understand for a person that as long as you track and project manage as a manager of this person, if there is a process to track and manage these four things, they will not leave. Number one, what are this person's personal short and long-term goals? Number two, what are this person's professional short and long-term goals? Number three, what does this person want to make in the short and in the long term? And number four, what is this person's love language, which is one of the most underrated ones that I've never actually seen anyone talk about besides me. Love language, the five love languages, is a book that is really meant for relationships and marriages. And what I realized when I went through that with my wife, I was like, holy crap. If I do acts of service where I take my wife's car and I clean it without her knowing, or if I get her a gift as a surprise, she's going to feel loved. But when she just hugs me, I feel loved. So we have a different way of feeling appreciated. I was just like, let's just bring that into the workplace. So for my team, I know everyone's love language, right? One of my team members, his primary love language is words of affirmations and gifts. So I need to, even when I have to give him very hard criticism, which this individual next month in Aarhus, he's going to get a very hard criticism. I'm going to have to build him up with like, hey, you're also doing all of these things well. And I'll give you another example. I have a team member, his primary love language is gifts. He told me in the onboarding forum, one of his personal long-term goals is to get a Tesla. So last year on his birthday, I sent him via Amazon a small Tesla car and I wrote a personal note on it. I said, here's to us helping you get this Tesla. Let's let this be a small token. But that individual, because his love language was gift and gifts, he felt, whoa, this guy really cares about me. For me, I don't give a crap if anyone gives me a gift. Like I feel nothing. So when you combine all four of these, how they want to be treated, how much they want to make, and you build a plan to help them on that personal and professional goals, short and long term, we're talking the 1 year and the 5 year, and either on a monthly or on a quarterly basis, we pull up this, it could be a simple dashboard, if you don't have an internal CRM for team members, it could be a spreadsheet. Do you go through each one of the three line items and all the while have preparation to treat them the way they want to be treated? If you do that, people will stay. That's a subset of culture, right? But they won't leave and they'll be more inclined to be more loyal. Or if they do leave, they probably won't screw you over, which happens a lot. People screw people over due to ethical or moral compass issues, but if they're more loyal to you, they'll likely give you the benefit of the doubt, maybe a 2 weeks notice or more.
Man, that's huge. We could have just done the podcast with those four items and that would change businesses everywhere, because those are the love language one, because the love language, you know, I think from, a lot of like old school professionals, it's like, well, it's not about emotion. It's like, everything's about emotion. What are you talking about? You know, and somebody being productive in a day, you could screw that up with one statement in the morning, and then that person's going to peace out mentally and just be like, I hate this place. And that's all that's in their head the whole time. And you ruined everything without even noticing it because you got their love language wrong, or just not considering that they're people. And I think that that's a huge tip, because if all business owners just did that, like you said, it was like a matchbox car. You know, here you go. Like, we'll get this for you someday.
$10 on Amazon.
Yeah, it took you 10 minutes. Like, it was almost nothing. And that person is probably going to tell that story forever. And when he does get that Tesla, he's going to tell that story and he's going to promote the brand. And I love that concept, because it's, you know, you could be good morally and ethically as a business owner, and it's profitable to be that way. It's not just the way you should be just because we're all humans and we should care about each other, but it's profitable to be like that. And that's winning all over the place. So that's huge. We can stop the podcast now. You did it. You
Thanks.
Won.
We did
podcast.
It.
Well, I love that. And that's huge. And I think all businesses at every level could actually use that a lot. So let's get into the Amazon story, because I do know some past workers from Amazon as well. It does sound very high pressure. And even though I know they
super high, super high.
And it's all performance, right? Like every single metric is tracked all the time. And so the fact that they could actually even install any human component to that system is pretty incredible. Were you kind of the first, group that was going through that?
I think they had started probably, so by the time I got to Amazon, I think I got to Amazon in year 19 of Amazon being in business, 19-ish. And I think it had started around like year 10 in the company. So by the time I was there, like they had really figured it out from that perspective. But one of the reasons I went to Amazon, I wanted to be an entrepreneur. Like that was my whole thing. I want to study this business. I'm going to learn. I don't know what business I want to run, but I'm going to study Amazon and I'm going to figure out business on the backside. So if I could figure out how to make these hourly warehouse employees and associates work really hard on my behalf for the company, so on a psychological level, if I uncrack that code, damn, give me a business where I'm like running, where people like are all aligned, it's fun, or it's like really motivating stuff, I'm golden. So what Amazon teaches, and one of the things I learned, right, they talk a lot about culture, right? So what I ultimately took out was what is the science behind this? Like, how do I intentionally crack the code every time I go? So there's a few things. So remember, culture is what your people say and do when you're not there. So one of the first components is you have to have good tracking and visibility. So you have to have good process to actually make sure performance is high. So let's go with the structure first, then we'll go to the people side. So first, it's number one, do we have very clear expectations, goals, and KPIs? Do we have a very clear process on how we do things with a very defined way on training people? Do we audit, coach, train on metrics as they come up? At Amazon, the metrics are being populated every hour. So I could see how I'm performing. My manager could see how me and the other managers are performing when I was earlier at my career at Amazon. So it's a culture of visibility. We can see this and then we're going to go get feedback on it. But then on a daily basis, there's end of day reporting, which this is the thing I bring into agencies, right? So at the end of every day across your business, right? And there's several different types of agencies. So we'll use like paid advertising. We'll also use websites because it's two type of approaches for paid advertising, right? For your accounts, cost per click, cost per lead, cost to acquire a customer. You could see that on a daily basis. Do you have that tracking? Do you have like a list for your account managers where they have to report out all that those metrics on a daily basis? And if you do that consecutively, and if you do that weekly, and if you do that monthly, you'll see the trend where their goal is when they send that end of the report, hey, like if I'm falling behind, here's why. Here's what I'm going to do differently tomorrow. Here's how I'm going to catch back up. Here are my lessons learned. Web development agency, we're building websites or software development agency. Here's the project timeline. We're on track. Good. If we're off track, here's why. Here's what we're going to do to get back on track. Here's what we learned. Here's what we're going to do to make the process better. And just by having the defined visibility in daily performance, we're on track or we're off track. And if we're off track, here's why and here's what we're going to do. Performance increases a lot just because you're going to see it. Just like in a basketball game, if someone shoots an air ball, everyone sees it. If someone shoots an air ball in business, everyone should see it. So that's really the framework of Amazon, just visibility. Once you have that, that goes to the people side, because if you're falling behind, how do you give feedback consistently? How can I consistently be on your case daily without you getting deflated? And that was the thing that was so intriguing to me. And it really comes down to a few things, right? It's everything I just said, right? Around love language, treating people, motivating them, all that stuff. But then the big ones to build culture where you now influence this behavior in a collective group, it's number one's values, right? So at Amazon, there's over 10 leadership principles and leadership values. So when you get feedback, if someone, I'll give you a great example. We have someone on our team who does a good job displaying ownership on his accounts, but over the long term needs to consistently be audited because he will defer to a performance behavior that's not ideal. So when I give feedback to him for using the example of ownership as the core value, hey man, like you display ownership in the short term, but over the long term, if I don't keep auditing and tracking you, you're going to defer to a low behavior like that is going to lead to churn. That's not displaying true ownership, right? So now I'm coaching towards a principle psychologically. So the principles are number one, use principles. And when you get feedback, you coach to that principle. Number two is heuristics. This is the thing that no one's heard about. Heuristics in science are defined as simple sets of rules that drive complex sets of behaviors. It's why ants could build ant forms that go for miles when they're so small, or why bees build beehives that are enormous. How the heck do these things that don't actually have brains like that could do much build these things? In their DNA encoding, simple, go get the food, bring it back to the hive. Go find the pollen and pollinate it, the flower, and go put up, right? In business, we need to create simple sets of rules for moments of ambiguity. So quick Amazon story. I'm a new manager. I get trained on this principle, trust but verify. It just means like you could trust your team to do it. You need to verify they do. I'm a new manager. I'm 21. I'm managing a team of 100. I have to go to the dentist. I leave early. I'm supposed to do my department's end of day report. I give it to my assistant manager, Justin, who now works for me. And I say, hey, bro, I got to go to the dentist. Can you do this? He says, yes. I don't check on him. I come in the next day. My manager, Charlton, comes to me and says, hey, Jordan, did you do the end of the report? I was like, no, but Justin sent it. He's like, did he? Did you trust but verify that he did? And in that moment, I got coached to a principle that then anchored my behavior to this thing. And now moving forward in the future, I had that principle in that moment of ambiguity. And I didn't realize going to the dentist was there's a moment of ambiguity or behavior I need to display. But because I got coached to the principle, it anchored me there. So we have values and we have heuristics. So Amazon has a lot of heuristics: trust but verify, assume positive intent, seek to understand. These are all managerial heuristics. And then the final components, right? It's, do you have a very clear mission of the company? Amazon's mission is to be the world's most customer-centric organization. So on a weekly basis, I'm talking about that with my team. I'm giving them something bigger than all of us. And on a lower level, what's our team objective? At Amazon, it's like, let's be the best in the world. I had an expression. I would scream kick and they would scream ass. It was so fun, but it was like, let's be the best in the world. Let's kick ass. So then we had a shorter term goal where we want to be the number one in the world. And there's like 500 teams at that level at any company. So those were the four things: values, heuristics, you're coaching towards principles, and teaching behaviors using these words that create more buy-in that you then get managed, assessed, coached on, that your annual reviews go back to. So now, like, if you want to get promoted or raised, you have to embrace those things anyway. Mission, Amazon's mission is the world's most customer-centric company. That's why they have like one-day shipping now. That's why they have Prime. If we were truly the best customer and the most customer-centric company, what would we do? That's why when you call asking for a refund, they don't question, they give it. Like, all these behaviors go back to that mission. And then a shorter term vision, like, what do we truly want to aspire to do in the short term? Let's sprint there. Let's be the number one in the world. Let's be the number one in this. And when you collect all of these things, and you have managers really drive them forward using visibility and the performance principles, you got great culture, which just means we have high output, high efficiency, which for you guys as listeners, you're maximizing your profit, right? And that's what, as an owner, that's one of the, when you look at the end of the month, that's what we really care about on a deep level. We just want to maximize our profit. You got to do it taking care of people. And that's how you collectively create culture.
Man, that's another great list. Well, and I love how you guys started with the fact that Amazon didn't just do this overnight. It was like started 9 years before you did. And then you came into it and they have all these systems. And I love the concept of the heuristics too. Because it's, a lot of times you just think like, well, let's just set the responsibilities and trust people to execute those responsibilities to the best of their ability. We'll review them so often to make sure that that's happening quarterly or annually, and then we'll go from there. But I think especially in this, this day, that's not good enough. Well, number one, we have a lot more information than we used to have, especially in terms of e-commerce and, just most businesses could collect more data than you ever have. And now you could actually assess the data, create programs, or integrate AI or custom programs to actually track all that information and go from there. So not that every small business could get to this level, but if you said like, hey, manager, I need these five metrics every day so we could track the results of whatever, like there's no way you can't set that up. But it doesn't have to be tomorrow, I think is the best point. It takes time.
It takes time. Yeah. It's an ongoing process.
It is. And I think if you just start at the basics of it, because a lot of businesses are like, well, when I get to a million, I'll have time to do that. Or when I get to 10 million or I get to 500 million or whatever. It's like, no, no, it starts like right now. And at every level you're at, it could work if you just sit down and start the process. And then you build on that over years. You know, 9 years for Amazon, billion-dollar company, and that makes sense. That's how long it would take. And by the small business, I think you just take the size of the business, like divide by that. It took Amazon 9 years, say, to implement this culture. And well, how big is your business? That's how long it should take correspondingly, because you don't have to, you know, hit 500 teams with these and train 500 people. You just have to train like literally yourself. Can you train yourself? Like, okay.
Start small. So the journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step, and just keep doing one thing and one thing. And I'll make that super tangible. And by the way, if you're watching this and you're saying like, why does this guy now have a shadow on his face? He didn't 5 minutes ago. The sun is rising in LA and now the clouds have parted. So it's like, oh, the light's coming through. Sorry for the orientation of my office. So my wife and I are expecting our firstborn in 2024. Congrats. Thank you. So excited. But there's now a lot of things that I have to do that, like, quite frankly, I really don't want to do it. Like, I really don't. So my time available in my business to work on the business, not in the business, it's like cut down significantly, because I got to go. My wife has a craving for a random thing. I got to go get it. I got to go help. She can't like move around as nimbly as she once was. So I got to go help with cleaning and whatever. Like, there's things I don't want to do, but I have to do it. But when I identify these are the things that will either alleviate a constraint or these things will disproportionately grow my company over a long term. And a good example for that for me is YouTube. Like, I went from 1 to 2 videos a week now. Like, that's my output. As long as I set aside the time to make sure that one thing gets done and I keep executing that, I will gradually, inch by inch, keep moving towards where I want to go. So my company this month, we've booked 8 calls. We got, today's the final day in the month of November. We booked 8 calls month to date on YouTube. I have like 1,500 subscribers, right? So I was like, damn, my videos only get like a couple hundred views and I'm getting 8 appointments in a month. Let's double down on this. So as long as I set aside the time and time block it, I might not be able to do it like crazy, do 4 videos a week. But if I can commit to this thing will disproportionately help me over a long term and just do the one thing that I can, and I'm okay with going at the speed that life is allowing me to, just find the one thing and keep doing the one thing, stay on the track, even if it's like 1 video a week in this example or 2 videos a week.
That's fantastic too. And I think it's just, yeah, it's about the consistency. You know, I always compare marketing and business with fitness, because it's like, you know, if you could set the whole plan and you could be a genius at it and you could still be a chubby trainer, you know, and you see that all the time. You're like, well, this guy's not doing it. It's like, no, it's because it's consistency. It doesn't matter how much knowledge you have or how much experience or how it worked out in the past. Like, every single day, what did you do today to move the ball forward? Because if you didn't do anything and you just planned it, it just doesn't matter. So I think you've given so many good pieces today, and really systematically. And I think, you know, the best reflection of Amazon's success and ability to do this is the fact that you remember all that crap. You know, like, you're quoting it, and it was such a good experience that you were
years later.
And that's what good company culture does. And it doesn't mean it's perfect and it could be better. It just means that it's good and it gets results and it could always be better. But, you know, just start the process and it'll happen. So fantastic tips. Definitely have to have you back. I do want to get into the exit and scaling and all that kind of stuff. But I think we've covered the foundation that really makes good business, which is the culture, and not just a culture of like, yay, rah, rah, I love the brand, but no, systematic progress for both the company and the employee, and that's how you win. So thank you so much for those.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So where can people learn more about you in the meantime?
Yeah, so if you're an agency and you're looking to grow systematically, our bread and butter is what everyone doesn't do. It's the ops, capacity, LTV, right? It's being able to grow the company through the people. I have a podcast myself, How to Scale an Agency. If you hear this, you're like, damn, like, I want to book a call with this company and talk to this guy and get a consultation, and go to 8figureagency.co/call. And if you want to check out some of the content, my Twitter handle is Jordan_Ross_8F. And my YouTube handle is JordanRoss8F. So Mark, thank you for having me on. And I really enjoyed this conversation.
Yes, definitely. And I think we'll have more in the future, because I think you're, you know, in line with how I think about a whole bunch of stuff. I'm like, oh, this is great. I don't even need to talk. So thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been great.
Thank you.
All right. And thank you so much for listening. Be sure to hit that follow button so you get notified when all of our new episodes release. Please share this with that friend who's clueless about digital marketing. And don't forget to visit digitalmarketer.com where you can access all of our courses, certifications, and training programs. Thanks again, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
This is Digital Marketer.
Get ready for the two easiest ways for you to generate product photos for your e-commerce store. I'm Lauren Petrullo, founder and CEO of Mongoose Media and Digital Marketer Academy faculty member. I've managed over 50,000 SKUs for over 100 different e-commerce sites, and I cannot tell you the importance of quality product photos. Not only are they important for your website, but they're great to be repurposed in your email marketing campaigns, your paid ad initiatives, and your organic social media content. It's imperative that you have great photos because great photos sell your products and start conversations with your consumers. There are two great solutions when seeking out quality product photos for your e-commerce site. One, UGC. We know that native user-generated content wins all day on social. When you can get your customers to share back their use of your products in their voice, in their personal applications, you will see dividends when that is repurposed in your paid ads and organic social feeds. Secondly, don't have customers or UGC yet? Not a problem. There are cost-effective solutions in which you can outsource that photography. This and so much more is covered in my modules in our e-commerce cert with Digital Marketer.